Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening, remember, you can always email your questions for the mayor today and for any of our mayors to ask@wbaa.org. Welcome to the show, Mayor Barton.
Good afternoon. Good to be here as always.
We're glad to have you. So we were chatting a bit before the show today, so we're going to jump into this. I wanted to start today off by talking about jobs. What jobs are open? Who's looking? Who's not looking? The perceptions versus the reality. I know you said the mayor's workforce roundtable was slated to start back up again today, started this morning. Those meetings paused during the pandemic. So let's start off. You know, what are you seeing and hearing on this in Crawfordsville?
Well, it's a complex issue. I'll tell you that it's not clear cut. But, you know, the reality is right now, and again, assessing this coming from the Workforce Roundtable this morning, the members at the table, which was really about our 15 largest employers, if you totaled up what they were telling us, you're probably in excess of 400 open jobs that they have. Now, that doesn't include, you know, the service sector and small businesses and things like that that aren't at the table. So certainly there are a lot of job openings. If you drive around Crawfordsville, you'll see signs everywhere. I mean, literally everywhere, help wanted and apply within. So that leaves us wondering, you know, what's going on? Why is this happening? And I think it's a complex answer. I don't think it's a simple answer. I think there are a lot of factors coming together. Obviously, the pandemic played a major role in where we are today. And it's caused a major shift from what I'm seeing in the labor market.
So just give listeners a sense of the businesses, you know, that do get involved with the Workforce Roundtable so we kind of know who we're talking about here.
Right. So that consists of, I always say our 17 largest, but today I think it was 15. I don't think the two of them are there, but our largest employers. So you're talking the major industries. They're all at the table. They're senior leadership, and oftentimes somebody from human resources is there because they're dealing with this on a day in and day out basis. So they're all present, and you know, it's a pretty standard across the board response when we ask them questions. They're all challenging. I know one particular industry told us, you know, they have 115, 120 openings right now. And that comes from the fact that, you know, they closed a facility in another city and moved it to Crawfordsville. So to combine with their existing facility. So, you know, it certainly is going on, but you also have to look, you know, in the service sector, because like I said, every fast food restaurant has a sign out front. So, you know, did the workers who were working there shift somewhere else? What's kind of going on? And it's not an easy answer.
So we're talking about all these complex factors. I know other issues that are being raised. Are employees being paid enough to make the available jobs worth applying for? Something that you and I have talked about on the show before, just in general, how are people continuing to handle the price tag and the complexity of finding childcare? You know, do you think that's still at work here?
Well, I think it is. I think it's a factor, and we've come a long way, you know, on the childcare front in this community. We provided a report to you know, the roundtable this morning on that. And, you know, if you look at what's happened here, rewind a couple of years, maybe more than 2 years, but, you know, our employers were telling us that workforce was a major issue keeping, or childcare was a major issue keeping people out of the workforce. And so we rolled up our sleeves. We all came together. We created a task force and they came up with some solutions. And then the Montgomery County Community Foundation stepped in and took a leadership role. And so, you know, the result is today we have 80 new childcare seats in Montgomery County and Crawfordsville area and more on the horizon. So, you know, we've come a long way. We have a childcare coalition that's been formed. We have a ways to go yet. But so that capacity has been improved. And I think that has substantially helped on the childcare front. But there are a whole host of other issues going on that really complicate this. And, you know, the sense is that wages are not the driving factor here for the most part. If you even look in the service sector, those wages have gone up considerably, you know, in the last year or two. So one thing we're hearing is work time, work hours, work conditions are all a factor that probably the younger generation puts a little more emphasis on than their predecessors.
So what's the solution there?
Well, if I knew, we
Big
probably wouldn't
question.
be in this situation. We're trying to flush those out. And I think there are things that can be done. And I think every employer is looking at themselves. How do we reconfigure to address some of those factors that are keeping people away? They're looking at different work hours. They're looking at different work schedules, different things like that. Like I said, I think a lot of them have really stepped up to the plate when it comes to addressing pay. But they've got these other factors hanging out there. And there's no doubt that, you know, the unemployment issue, I mean, that gets brought up a lot. It plays into it to a certain degree. I don't think it's the driving factor that decides everything. But I think it does, you know, cause some shifts in that labor market.
So would you anticipate, and people, economists we've spoken with have stressed this as well, you know, there is a certain portion of the population who will kind of start looking at more seriously reentering the workforce once, for example, federal unemployment benefits go away in Indiana next month. There will be that will have an impact, essentially.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So I guess, and another thing too, I'm thinking as you're talking, you know, the conversations around remote work right now. I mean, there are lots and lots of ways in which the past year has shifted how we look at our workday and what's valuable to us as employees. You know, are there just lots of areas? Is, you know, work and the workforce just another area where the impact of the pandemic has just made itself felt in terms of revealing, you know, different structural issues that maybe have been here all along in some way?
I think we're in the process of, and I say we collectively, not just us, but mm-hmm. I think we as a society are in the process of sorting that out right now. I don't think there's any clear sense of what the long-term impact is going to be right there, because everybody was saying during the pandemic, well, this is the new normal and everybody's going to be working remotely and we've proven that this will work. And I don't know that we have totally. I think we've proven that there can be some modifications and some changes. But right now, I think we're just going through this. I think everybody's head spinning, trying to figure out what we can do remotely and what we can't do remotely, because, you know, at the end of the day, it works in some situations and it doesn't in others. So that's what I sense right now. A lot of employers are really trying to sort that out. And, you know, employers I've talked to said in the early stages of that, productivity was as high or higher for people working remotely. But they saw a sharp decline, you know, months later as people kind of got into that new routine of working from home. So I think the verdict's still out there. I don't think we know for sure where we're headed.
I think, too, you know, you're saying a sharp decline. And we're talking, we're kind of speculating here on all of the different things that are a part of this. I think important to you to remember that people were working through a once-in-a-lifetime global pandemic. Also hard to gauge possibly the impact that had on people's productivity, mental health, you know, things like that overall.
Many cases, their children were at home. That mm-hmm. was a factor. You know, mm-hmm. they were not in school, so they were trying to help their children. A lot of factors there.
So, and just to circle back on this a little bit, so this morning I'm hearing, and tell me if I'm wrong, you know, is the, you know, mathematical sense here, like there are more open jobs than maybe previously there have been, you know, that it's noticeable. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, you know, there were a lot of open jobs before the pandemic, at least in our community. And then, you know, we went through that whole transition. And what we're hearing now is there's even more than what we had then, because, again, that labor market has shifted. And I told the group this morning, I said, well, I have some good news and some bad news. It's good news for the community, but the bad news for all of you is that we are on the cusp of adding several hundred more jobs to this community. And I know that's not something that, you know, human resources people want to hear in our existing industries or businesses, but that's the reality. And that means we have to really figure this out. And, you know, we're poised and ready to really recruit new residents to come to this community, because the opportunity is here, and to really recruit our next generation to stay here. The one piece that's hanging out there that we have to figure out is the housing. And that's why we've been hesitant to really aggressively market, you know, to the outside world, the opportunities that exist here, because we just know that there's no place really for people to live who want to come here. So we're working feverishly on that aspect of it. If we can figure that out, match up developers with landowners and provide adequate housing. I think we're on the verge of, you know, really addressing the problem by bringing in new residents.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. Right now we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. So at the start of this year, when you gave your State of the City address, talked about Crawfordsville's economic development efforts in 2020, you said the city received 54 leads from companies looking to locate new operations in 2020, and you said that was surprisingly on par with previous years. And then added the city was only able to submit proposals on 9 of those leads because most of the companies were looking for areas with, you know, existing buildings that already met their specifications, their guidelines. And fast forward to right now, I just saw the county was, you know, unable to land a significant project, a meat production facility because of a lack of land. Maybe some other projects are being missed out on because, you know, there's a desire for an already existing space that's just not quite available. So I was curious, you know, first, can you talk about the prevalence of that very specific issue?
What we're seeing here is the number of leads we are receiving is down significantly, but the quality, the quantity is down, but quality is up. So the leads we do receive are much more serious, more focused. The story that ran in one of the local newspapers that you're referring to about the meat processing, that was kind of misinterpreted. What had happened is during the Economic Development Authority meeting, there's a report that's issued on these missed opportunities. That was one of those. So it wasn't that we were pursuing that project and couldn't land it. That was just pointed out as a project lead that was out there that we were not even eligible to apply for because we didn't have the land and the other requirements. So, you know, we do see that. And typically what we miss out on is they want existing buildings and we don't have an inventory of suitable buildings for them. And land is another issue.
So, again, it's just, it's interesting, to what extent are, you know, cities beyond Crawfordsville dealing with a similar issue? You know, how often are companies coming in and saying, I need you to have this space that's X 100,000 feet? You know, how common is that?
I think it's very common. I think we're all dealing with the same thing. And some communities have been able to address that by creating spec buildings that are sitting there ready to go. We've looked at that. We're just not quite in a position to do that right now because we really don't have, I mean, I don't have much room left in my Commerce Park. I don't have some of the things that we need in place to do that. It could happen in the future. But right now, again, when you have such a tight labor market, you kind of have to strike that balance because I want growth. I want new job opportunities. I want to increase our assessed value, but I also have to understand that currently I only have so many workers to go around and my current employers are struggling. So I have to kind of balance those things out.
I also read the city commissioned a study of a specific part of town to see how much land could be developed for investment. And you said in your State of the City address also, if some projects in the pipeline came through, that Crawfordsville Commerce Park would be almost full. And now the city has commissioned a study for that to see what other land can be developed, you know, within that property. So what's the latest there?
Well, we're in the process of doing that study right now. So if you look at the Commerce Park, the existing part, we really have one parcel left. I mean, there are a couple of small pieces, but one parcel left. And we're working 3 projects, potential projects on that one parcel right now. And obviously, we won't get all 3. And if we do, we have a problem because they want all 3 go on there. So the city also owns, as part of the Commerce Park, property to the south of Concord Road. And we're looking at that right now to see how much of that we can develop because there's some wetlands in there. It's very heavily wooded. It's rough terrain. There's always been this big question mark surrounding that property. You know, how much can you do? How much can you not do? So we've hired a firm to come in and really sort it out for us, tell us what we can develop and what we can't. The rest, I'm sure, will get set aside as, you know, a nature park and trails and things like that. So we're in the early stages of that right now because we just don't have property to submit for these projects. When we get leads, we have to say, okay, we have property here. It's ready to go. We'll propose this. And so that's what we're trying to do is prepare ourselves for that next step.
And then you alluded to a project that maybe is coming through that would add jobs. If you want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, both the city and the county are working strong projects right now. We've got several that are expansions for our existing employers that could add several hundred jobs. There's another one that the county is working on. It went through the county plan commission yesterday for a rezone of an area just outside the city. It's around 300 jobs. So there's a lot of activity out there, and it's good quality, sound activity. It's not, you know, we're not chasing leads all over the place. These are really good projects. So I think, you know, if you look at two or three of things we're doing and what the county's doing, you could see some significant announcements this year.
And then you mentioned, and I want to give you a chance to talk about this a bit more, and I've heard this from other mayors, you know, the issue of housing and working on that stock because
yes.
You can't have employers come into town if they don't have a place to live. So what actions are you taking? What are you working on? You know, how does that problem get solved?
Well, the housing market here is very tight at every price point, and so we've been trying to address that. And you know, it seems simple on the surface. Let's just go recruit housing developers and have them come to our community. But it gets a little more complicated because, you know, what's happened in the past is the developers will focus on areas where they have economies of scale. So they'll just keep building in those communities and building and building. And I think the greater Lafayette area has seen that. To entice them to come a little bit farther and come to a Crawfordsville or a smaller community, you know, the economies of scale maybe aren't there. So you have to make them comfortable that they'll be successful here. A few years ago, the state legislature passed residential TIF or tax increment financing. That's a new tool that communities our size can use, but communities that are larger that have had a lot of housing starts cannot use. So that kind of leveled the playing field. And that was a game changer, I think, for us. So right now, it's just been a matter of finding the right developers that we're comfortable with. We can build that partnership. And we're there. We've done that. And now it's trying to find the land at a price that, you know, you can make the numbers work to put these developments in. So we're in that process right now. We're negotiating with some landowners, and we have to have the plans in place, of course, to get the infrastructure there. We need sewer. We need water. We need those kinds of things.
So Crawfordsville opened a new park, the Kathleen J. Steele Park. You were quoted saying that the park was an investment in Crawfordsville's children and families, and that you hoped that what you see here is not the end, just the beginning, as we replicate this in other areas of our city. Can you tell us a little bit about this park?
Sure. Yeah, exciting. So that particular park was a playground for an elementary school that's been closed for several years. And the school corporation had come to us at one point and said, you know, look, we noticed that everybody in the neighborhood kind of plays on this old playground, and it's the school's not there. It's kind of it's in bad shape. Would you be interested in taking it for a park? We said, sure. And really, we knew it's a work in progress. So we just kind of created green space with, you know, a few little amenities. The former school is now occupied by the Youth Services Bureau, and they've really fixed it up. It's awesome. And so we'd planned to improve the park over time. But what ended up happening is an anonymous donor stepped forward and really wanted to help us accelerate that process. So, you know, all said, the project's, you know, $450,000 or so. And it's not a very big park, but it is over the top nice. And, you know, it's exciting because it's a neighborhood park. That's a section of our city that's very heavily populated with families and children. They did not have green space. All the parks were on the other side of the city. And it's just a family-focused place. And it gave us the chance to design a park from the ground up, if you will. So the equipment is designed to be all-inclusive. So children with disabilities can access the swings and things like that. And children on the autism spectrum are taken into consideration as you design things. So, yeah, it's awesome, and it's named after Dr. Kathleen Steele, who was a longtime superintendent of Crawfordsville Schools, and she fought her entire career to make you know, this community better for children. So it's just very fitting.
So you're describing kind of, you know, specific things about this park that, I mean, are there other parks in Crawfordsville that feature that type of equipment or those kind of accommodations?
Well, no, not really. I mean, we've done things like in Milligan Park and some of the other parks to kind of head that way, but to be able to design it from the ground up, you know, was a new opportunity we'd never had. So as we replace equipment in the other parks, we're taking those things into consideration, but we had never been able to just start with this concept in mind. And we have quite a few neighborhood parks.
Okay.
And some of them are in various stages. And what I was saying the other day is that, I'm hoping what we're doing here is setting the stage that we can start to really improve those other neighborhood parks. Now, I don't know that we're always going to have an anonymous donor step forward and want to provide us with that kind of money.
Right.
But we can certainly move in that direction. And I envision, adding more. And they don't have to be anything large and super, over the top. Just you need that green space in neighborhoods for children to go and pick up a ball and play.
And I was going to ask, an anonymous donor that, does help make it a reality, obviously a very unique factor here.
Yes.
I guess, how are you thinking creatively about continuing to develop parks like these without that kind of, additional assistance? Maybe like you said, it won't be as elaborate, but,
right.
Some elements can
well,
be continued.
It's just part of planning, and we have a parks master plan, and the Parks Department does a great job. And, the other side of it, and they always remind me of this, it's not only about, finding the money to construct the park. Once it's there, we have to maintain it. So, it's an ongoing thing to think about. And I've pushed them, undoubtedly, I've pushed them pretty hard, the staff, because I want to add these offerings. So I know they're thinking, oh my gosh, another park to take care of. But we really need these things in our neighborhood. This is what it's all about. And if you go by that particular park, I mean, there are kids there all the time and parents and families. And it's exactly what we need in our community.
So in relation to city projects in general, wanted to ask another burgeoning issue at the moment is high construction prices. Is this impacting anything for the city right now, or could it be impactful down the line?
Well, it's not at the moment, and we don't really have any building projects per se underway right now. Now, I know the county does with the government center that they're working on, some things like that. So, but it is a factor in housing. If we're talking about adding housing, and it's driving up the cost of constructing a new home. Everything we're hearing is that it will level out and it will return to somewhat normal at some point. So we're not far enough along in our big projects, such as housing developments, for I think to have a direct effect yet. We're still months out from actual construction. So hopefully things will normalize somewhat before then.
Okay. You and I talked about Crawfordsville electric light and power rate hikes on this show. I went back into the archives, into the depths of time, just to check exactly when this was, in February of 2020. So I just wanted to circle back and ask you about a rate hike
right.
that looks like it's going to be happening this summer, if you can tell us about that.
So we had gone through that process a few years ago and discovered that after it was implemented, there was an error, and the utility really didn't capture what they were supposed to capture from that. So we went through it again, and that's the story you're finding. Then it went to the Utility Regulatory Commission, where they had to sign off and do all their things. It's now back in our hands, and it looks like it will be implemented, and will start to take place. And the interesting thing there is our rates in Crawfordsville are so incredibly low. And that's good. That's what we want. But, even after this increase, we'll still be in the bottom half for sure. And this is solely designed to allow us to really stay ahead of infrastructure issues. A lot of communities with community power are not maintaining their infrastructure, and they're going to be in trouble, in a few decades. We are constantly upgrading our system, our substations, our transmission lines, our distribution lines, those kinds of things. And that's what we're after with this, is just making sure we can keep up with that growth and keep things in tip-top condition. When you look at industry, reliability is extremely important, and you don't get that unless you keep your system up. So we need to construct a new substation on the north side to keep up with growth, some things like that. And that's what this rate increase is about.
A few shows ago, you mentioned the city would be working with some lawyers to determine kind of the hows and whys of spending the city's federal COVID-19 funding. It looks like you officially entered into an agreement. Have you started having those conversations yet about how to spend that money?
We've started having them, but I don't have any answers. How's that?
That is an answer.
I wish I did. I wish I could say this is exactly where we're headed. It's starting to kind of take shape, but we're not quite there yet. But I think, I'm hoping, in the next month or two, we can really start to lay that out for the community and have a discussion about it. What I know about it is there is still, to this day, a lot of confusion surrounding that funding and what you can and cannot do. So we want to make sure we do it the right way and then really start to fill in, you know, the structure from there.
So Montgomery County's COVID-19 case numbers are continuing to drop. That's a statewide trend. And last month's show, your vaccination update for us, I believe, was 25.9% of the county had been fully vaccinated. And then as of the update, the Indiana Department of Health just provided, as of this morning, their update was that 12,117 county residents have been fully vaccinated. So percentage-wise, don't know where exactly you're at right now, but what I'm hearing is that maybe the percentage of the population that's been vaccinated right now in certain counties, it might hover there for a bit, might stall out there. What are you hearing?
Well, I think we have plateaued out, and I think there is still a lot of hesitancy out there about the vaccine. And I know as a community and the health department, they're really working to try to address that. They've done a series of videos, you know, with citizens from different segments of the population where they thought they were lagging, talking about the vaccine and why they chose to get it and what it meant to them. I think those have helped. I know I'm going to be doing a podcast coming up with Dr. Douglas, and he's going to answer some of the most common questions surrounding the vaccine. So unfortunately, a lot of people are getting their information from social media and they're making decisions based on that. So, you know, it's just a continuous push to try to get good, solid information out there so people can make good decisions. But ultimately, what I tell people is, you know, that's a decision you have to make, and you should talk to your healthcare provider. I mean, you trust them with your health and everything else. You know, you need to go talk to them about the vaccine to see if you should be taking it. I have a suspicion. I know what they're going to tell you, but you need to go talk to them because you trust them with, you know, your blood pressure, your diabetes, everything else. You need to talk to them about this and make a decision. Don't make a decision based on what you read on somebody's Facebook page.
We've talked about vaccinations in schools on the show before, and I wanted to quickly ask today about what Wabash College is doing, particularly given the conversation right now around mandating COVID vaccines at universities. You know, IU mandated them last week, and then our attorney general issued an opinion about the legality of said mandate yesterday.
Right.
So a big, you know, point of conversation right now. Didn't know what Wabash was doing.
Yeah, I've not heard from them on this issue, so I don't know. I'm sure it's something they're discussing, but I've not heard that they've made a decision one way or the other as to whether or not they'll require the vaccine. So I'm sure we'll hear from them, and you know, in the next month or so, what they're doing there. But we've been very focused on the city side on just the normal vaccines with our school children. I mean, Indiana lags in that category. Our community was lagging, and now with our mobile integrated health community paramedics are giving the routine vaccines, not just COVID, but the routine vaccines in our schools. And that's powerful.
And that is our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks
Thank
so much
you.
For being with us. You can
Thank
find
you.
This program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Frankfort, and Crawfordsville. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.